All right, listen to this while we were coming out of commercial.
227 yards. Colt Nost. Hole in one, we haven't had one since Jason Hayes.
Those burning rays are wearing down his body. And diesel's worth the price of gold. It's the cheapest grain he's ever sold.
Alrighty, folks, welcome back to episode number 33. Your boy Jay Swish, right off the tips of the couch, just had a hockey night in Scottsdale. We recorded a little bit of that game. We did the whole game. We did a live stream, a Tuesday night tilt featuring the Washington Capitals and the Detroit Red Wings. My God, Azzo, that game, so boring. It's like watching fucking paint dry. I mean, the Capitals just kind of lured the Red Wings to sleep, and they ended up winning that game. Ovi tucked a late one in the second period and kind of put the nail in the coffin. The third period was just more or less the same. It wasn't perfect, my friend, that game. I mean, watching the Capitals play, just I don't know how this team's going to make the playoffs. I mean, even watching Detroit play, like Ovi and that team, they won that game, Ozzie, but they're so goddamn slow. Like when they play their first round matchup of whoever they get, if it's the Rangers, if it's Carolina, like they're going to get whacked for Cobb. They're not going to win a game. That team is the slowest team I've ever seen play. We've watched them back-to-back weeks now in terms of on Hockey Night in Scottsdale. It's like, holy fuck. I mean, how are they going to make the playoffs? Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's just I don't know. So
I don't understand it either. Like Jordo, I've watched them every game. I've watched them. I can't believe they have a winning record. They look terrible.
Oh, it's horrible. Like, I mean, I'm not saying I'm a big Washington Capitals fan or I watch them a lot, but the last 2 weeks I've watched them, and for a team eyeing down a playoff spot, I'm like, holy shit. It's so boring. They're so slow. Detroit obviously plays that 1-3-1 style. Derek Lalonde, Newsy Lalonde, who coached me in Green Bay, plays that similar style of neutral zone to his boy John Cooper, who he coached years with in Tampa Bay. So they kind of sit back as is, but Washington, not the fleetest of foot team. I mean, they're not dicing it up out there. They're kind of clunking around. Dylan Strome was able to get one in the second, and then Ovi late in the dying seconds gets that game to 2-2, and then it was pretty much over. But before we get to any other hockey talk and NHL talk, as we always do over here at Live and Five, we plug our YouTube page. Folks, please go check out our YouTube page. That is at Live and Five 2024. Again, every like, every subscription, all you tuning into our shorts on there, everything you can find on our social media pages is all on the YouTube page. So please go over to at Live and Five 2024. This is episode number 33, the Larry Bird special. Talk about a white boy that just made hooping cool again. The pride of French Lick, Indiana, played his college ball at Indiana State. Obviously made his way to the association to the Boston Celtics. But Larry Bird, one of my all-time favorites, another number 33 of my all-time favorites. Speaking of the man, the myth, the legend himself, the Godfather. Folks that don't know, that is Clark Saunders. Clark Dale Saunders, good friend of ours, a Gulf Trip guy, North Dakota goalie, came over from Alabama Huntsville back when that program almost folded like a Wee Fest tent back in the day. He came over to UND. He transferred. Man, was he awesome. Fit right in, got a suit tattoo right on his heart like the second day he got there. I mean, just talk about a guy that was bleeding green, even down south in a nice state of Alabama, but came north, joined the boys. So shout out to Dale, a true friend of the show. Folks, as always, we're brought to you by Butter Golf and Mini Movers. Butter Golf, the official lifestyle and apparel brand over here at Live and Five. Mini Movers, the official moving company of Live and Five. Speaking of a guy you moved, Azzo just tucked his 40th goal of the season, Brock Besser, up in Vancouver. So shout out to Bess, shout out to Mini Movers, and shout out to Butter Golf. Azzo, before we get going into the greatest week, arguably, in all of sports over in Augusta, I see you putting your mitt on right now, my friend. God, does it feel good going into the iconic week of the Masters, a week you sit on the couch the whole goddamn time. You watch the Masters. The coverage is unbelievable. Their app is so good. Before we get to that, and before we get to our awesome interview today with Colt Nost, who will be boots on the ground at Augusta calling the entire tournament for CBS alongside the great Jim Nantz. Those two guys are probably the best in golf right now as far as I'm concerned. So Nosty was awesome. He stopped by to talk to us for about 45 minutes regarding everything Masters. Unbelievable dude. So fired up for that conversation. We're fucking hot on the interviews lately, but that is long-winded. Ozzo, what's up, man? How you doing? How's the weekend snap? Let's get to that first. What's shaking, baby? How you doing? You had a late day in the office today. Man, you're a fucking grinder. You put the work boots on from 5 a.m. to 10 p.m., and then you get right on the airwaves with your boy Swish. We talk it out, but how you doing, man? What's up on a Tuesday?
Doing well, man. It's always fun being on here. You know, this is easy. You get to sit down. I got a nice comfortable chair. I'm sitting back just talking with my buddy. But yeah, the weekend was good. Jodo actually went and saw Cat Williams at the old Target Center. And
no way. Cat's, you got to see Cat? Yeah, dude. He's one of my favorites.
Cat's a legend, man. He's a legend. But
how
boy,
was that?
He brings a dark crowd. I mean, I think I was like one of maybe 30, you know, Caucasians in there, but God damn it, right. I was laughing. Most of the time he was making fun of me. So it was kind of funny. Like everyone's looking at us, like laughing at us. And I was like, this is funny. This is great. You know, he's making fun of white people. But it was great. It was awesome, man. It's always great to see a legend. I mean, Cat's, where's Cat rank, man? He's up there. Like he's an all-timer.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. I mean, just remember back in the day, like back to my junior days, and a guy you know, Caleb Herbert, who played at the University of Minnesota Duluth. He was a roommate of mine in Sioux City, and we'd always put on that Cat Williams bit late at night after crushing a couple Four Locos down in the basement, and we put on that Every Day I'm Hustling bit. And still to this day, that is one of the best bits of all time when he's talking about he's in the grocery store. He's like, you know you ain't got the $4.99 to buy that motherfucker, but you in there, every day I'm hustling. He's like doing a dance. It's the clip is all time. The whole bit is amazing. But what was his current bit on? You mentioned he was making fun of white boys. Was there anything else funny? Was he shooting off about Hollywood, how he kind of did in that sit down with Shannon Sharp? Or was it mostly just making fun of, you know, the old white folk over here? Come on, baby. You know, you're there supporting. Let's go. We won a ball.
It was great. It was a lot of, you know, making fun of white people doing dumb stuff. I wish I could remember exactly what he said. I can't, but yeah, he definitely went into the Hollywood thing. And he called all that shit. He called Diddy on Club Shay Shay with Shannon Sharp. So yeah, I mean, it was awesome. Like I think he had like fucking five or six openers. Some of them were pretty funny. Some of them I didn't really listen to, just kind of talked. I was sitting in a suite. So whenever you're in a suite, you kind of just, you go back and forth from conversation in the back, maybe around the island table, to actually watching the show. So it was great though. And then obviously we went out and had a nightcap after and kind of got after it. But then Saturday, Jordo, Saturday, crazy. I agreed to go put up this guy's jungle gym in his backyard. And
oh God,
he's got this old jungle gym that he brings out. I mean, it was bigger than my fucking elementary school jungle gym. It was insane. I can't believe I agreed to it. But anyways, you know, I find myself digging holes. I got a big blister on my hand. If you can see that, I got a blister from, you know, going zero mode on holes. Digging up holes.
I was gonna say you went full Hector Cerrone.
Yes, there it is. There it is. But yeah, I did that for about 8 hours on Saturday. Hung to the gills. But God damn it, I was no longer hung after the day. Felt great
after.
Oh, just done. Out in the open, you know, sunshine, clean air. Yeah, it was fine. You know, you're just a bunch of guys grabbing tools and getting to work. But God damn it, it went way longer than I thought it was going to go.
Yeah, a project like that is always not perfect. But did you have a set of mitts on? I know you got your glove mitt on right now, but did you have a pair of Franklins when you were doing that? Or were you bare-knuckling it, bare-backing it, and not having any protection on those hands? Because a job like that, my friend, you need a little something between the skin and the, you know, laying down that lumber.
Yeah, no, I made a huge mistake. I didn't think I'd be digging holes. I honestly went over there thinking I'd be twisting wrenches, maybe holding up some wood. But I found myself shovel in hand, fucking digging trenches. There's nothing worse in the world, Jordo, than digging holes. I mean, it's terrible. It destroys your back, your hands, your wrists. I mean, it is awful. I can't believe this guy made me dig a hole in his yard. It's insane.
You know, shout out to, you know, my Uncle Mark, right? The nerd, you know, he's just an absolute buzzsaw, absolute beauty. You know him very well, Ozzo. And we got to give Nerd a shout out on this show right now, because this guy back in his day, and he could still probably fucking do it, but he would install sprinkler systems at an alarming rate. So he learned of this trick of the trade when he was doing it in college. He was working with a local guy actually in Grand Forks, one of his good buddies who ran a company doing sprinklers in the summer, I think different odd jobs as well. But nerd, like, I just remember vividly remember him, you know, every house we moved into it when we were younger, whether it was their house or, you know, our folks and our family moved a couple times, the sprinkler system would always be put in. And you know that job very well too, just seeing guys do it in and around homes. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're digging a bunch of holes, you're gutting it out, and this guy would be absolutely buzzing. There'd be mud all over his face. He'd have blisters all the way up to his elbows. I mean, he'd be fucking red all over, dirt everywhere. There'd be shit all over the place. But goddamn it, he'd get that job done at a pace I've never seen anyone play it. And if you know how he talks and you know how much hard he buzzes, can't you just picture him just absolutely putting in the sprinkler system?
I was just going to say that. Just knowing him, that is the least surprising thing I've ever heard. I mean, that is just like to a T. Like, that does not surprise me one bit. And I wish I had game film of it. I would fucking watch that.
Oh, man. And I still can just picture it like it was yesterday. I mean, he'd be directing traffic. He'd usually have like my Uncle Monty out there. My dad would be inside doing nothing because he's too smart to even go out there and just try to get in the way. Like, he's not going to be doing that job. So he's just like sitting inside. He puts his best man on it, as they say in Caddyshack, Carl Spackler. And he goes out there and just starts having an absolute field day. And he, goddamn it, he'd have that thing installed. He'd have all the buttons and everything ready, connected through the electrical system into the box, into the garage, and like a day's work. I mean, this guy, holy fuck, would he buzz, and he still buzzes. So shout out to the nerd, one of the best, an OG. So Ozzo, I feel your pain over there. That is just some good old-fashioned blue-collar work. My weekend over here, Ozzo, folks were in town. Kylie Schmaltz, legend of the game, came into town. But you know who I got to see, actually, we mentioned a little bit in that pre-show, was Brock Besser, our good boy Bess.
Did you?
I had him on.
How's he doing?
Yeah, just quickly after the game on Wednesday, played against Nick. The Vancouver Canucks skated away with a win. But, yeah, it was good to see Best. They were on their way to L.A., but, you know, just always good seeing one of your own, a golf trip guy, hang out with him for 5-10 minutes. You know what? The fella, he's looking skinny right now. He's looking lean. Like, he's 7% body fat. I've never seen him like this. Normally, you know, Best is carrying a little bit of the love handle. Man,
yeah, he's put a little bit on him.
He looks good. Yeah, it's not, nice. Nothing on him. Also, his jaw is chiseled, and he's looking really good. I mean, there's no reason. I mean, there's no secret why the guy's had his best year of his career. Like, he looks in really good shape, man.
About time he's fucking taking it seriously.
Yeah, only year 7, so that was cool. And then on Friday, also, Nicky played his 500th game. So the folks didn't even know that. I had, you know, had wind of it or whatever, but my parents came in just to see us and hang out. And they're like, oh, wow, it's Nick's 500th game. So after the game on Friday, that game they beat Vegas with 6 unanswered goals, we went over to Steak 44, great little spot, probably the most National League spot in the desert, had a table of probably 15 guys, family included, but, you know, 3 to 6, 7 guys stopped over. It was pretty cool just hanging out. Nick, they had a great game. He had a couple apples. Obviously, you know, the dogs have been out for a while, but anytime you can beat Vegas, especially rallying like that in the third tier over at the iconic Mullet Arena, it was cool, man. It was awesome to see, and, you know, just the support he has from his teammates. You know, obviously he's a good dude, but it's just cool what that means to the whole family and, you know, to Nick. And here's to 500 more, Fala Ozzo. But Sunday, my friend, I mean, were you not tuned in to the Caitlin Clark and the Gamecock show? This, to me, was the first time I've ever really watched women's ball. I'm saying in the tournament wise, I watched probably, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I probably watched a Sweet 16 game, half of it. And then I watched the Elite 8 game. And then I watched the, you know, up into the Final Four. But man, what a game. I mean, for the first time ever, the women's Final Four outdrew the men's. It was 18.9 million versus like 14.6 million. And I was in that category. Like, I only watched the women's. Yesterday, I found myself watching maybe 5 to 10 minutes of that men's game. I was watching hockey more so, but did you watch that game? And you just feel for a girl like Clarke, leaving her chin out there, leaving everything she had in the game. Obviously going to go down as probably the best college women's basketball player of all time.
For sure. But
you got to touch on how good that South Carolina team is. Those girls are so athletic. I was fucking, it was wild. Dude, like,
what do they go 38, 39 and 0? How do you do that? Yeah. How do you not lose a game? Like, how do you not?
I don't know.
I know you can be that much better than everyone else, but how do you not just drop one? Like, you show up like, oh, we don't really feel like playing this game. We're going to play like shit. I don't know. That's impressive. But yeah, Caitlin Clark is an all-time great. Did you see Jordo? She's I did watch that game. I wanted her to win so bad, but you're not going to beat that South Carolina team. Did you see Jordo? They're already selling tickets in the WNBA for when they play the team who has the first overall pick. So Caitlin Clark, like, they're already selling out tickets.
No,
for Caitlin Clark to come to town, the rookie. Yeah. Insane. They're some of the women's teams are going to bigger stadiums for their first game when they play this team, because Caitlin Clark's coming to town. I mean, that's how big of a name she is. It's insane.
It's so sick. And I mean, I'm a big Jersey guy as is. Like, I need to find me a Clarkey 22 car on Iowa, the Hawkeyes, sure, jersey, or maybe even a WNBA jersey, because she was that nasty. And I mean, she had the Iron Curtain on her, man. That was a Joseph Stalin like trap. I mean, she couldn't get away from anyone. That, you see that girl on South Carolina, the defender had her hand literally in her eyes the whole time. Like, every time she was dribbling, you know, like when you're playing on the pavement out at recess, or you're on the wood in a pickup game and the guy's just got a hand in your face, like, it literally makes you want to fight them, like, to the point where, like, buddy, you better get that hand out of my face. I'm gonna swat that away. I'm gonna take a technical Rasheed Wallace style and punch you in the face, or maybe I'll even go Auburn Hill style, meta world peace, and fucking just start brawling right now, because that is so goddamn annoying. And she was all over, like, white on rice.
Yeah, you actually, when someone has it, you're right. Like, I actually can't last more than probably 10, 15 seconds with a hand in my face before I'm like, all right, buddy, I'm fucking playing basketball in a fucking driveway. Like, let's let up. Like, you want to go? Like, are we going right now? Like, do we need to do this? It's so annoying. That's so funny.
Oh, it's the worst. It's the worst. Like, the whole game, she was like that. And you could just tell the athleticism versus the two teams. I mean, South Carolina, the way they can move the ball, their big girls were unbelievable. Good feet. Iowa, kind of clunky farmer girls. Mm-hmm. They relied a lot on their passing, a lot on their cuts, where, you know, South Carolina was up and down the floor, move the rock, get up and down. Iowa was kind of like milk the shot clock, try to find the perfect little play and or pass or cut. So I just thought that game was great. And you know what? For a team like South Carolina, you got to give a shout out to this guy. And I don't know if you're aware of this guy, Azzo. His name was Gamecock Jesus. And actually, my sister was telling me about him, because he used to go to her volleyball games when they go play South Carolina. So this Gamecock Jesus, this guy, he was a super fan of over 50 years in South Carolina. You look him up online, he legit looks like Jesus. I mean, I'll pull up a couple pictures here for the folks right now. But anyways, Gamecock Jesus died in December. I'm not sure from what, but he had never missed a women's game or a men's game in, I think, close to 50 years. Like, it was crazy. So it was cool that they won for him. And just what a name. I mean, you're talking about Gamecock Jesus. Like, this guy, an absolute legend. You just live for those fans, you know, that are just of the game, right? Like, I'm trying to get a, you know, Gamecock Jesus here. So I wanted to give him a quick shout out. They did it for him, you know, one of the true super fans of college sports, and a guy that just, you know, with a stiff chin, and, you know, we lost him this year. So anyways, moving over to, well, the felt, my friend, staying south with it, but a little bit into Georgia. We're talking about the greatest week of all of sports. And we were lucky enough to have on a guy covering this event, Azzo, and Colt Nost, who you'll hear from later, covers the Masters, literally be boots on the ground on the course, providing insight and analysis from the felt of Augusta. But if you're thinking about the three best weeks of the year, I'm thinking Christmas, I'm thinking the Masters, and I'm thinking the week your wife takes her annual girls trip and gets out of town. I mean, we're talking about the three, one of the Triple Crown best, you know, weeks of the year, arguably, if not the best, maybe when your wife leaves, that might be the best. Who knows? I don't know what you got going on at home, but there's nothing better than Augusta. I mean, we're talking about just the mecca of all of golf, all of sports. Azzo, I just wanted to touch on just a couple of my favorite holes. Nosti, obviously, I won't give too much away, but he had mentioned number 12, the Golden Bell. I mean, it's tough to top that. Tucked into Amen Corner, the par three, a silky little cheeky par three. Everything bleeds towards the water. Another hole I love is number 16. That creates a lot of late drama in terms of another par three. There's water in play. That hole, I believe, is called Red Bud, playing about 170 yards over the water. So just touch on Augusta in terms of just what it means. I mean, you're going to be glued on your couch all weekend, no, watching this. This is an absolute dart fest. I mean, the Masters app is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Coverage. Just talk about it head to toe.
Yeah, no, it's the best. It really is. It's my favorite golf tournament. I know the majors are all awesome, so it's they're real close together, but the Masters, it doesn't get beat. I just love that they play at the same course every time, and it's like the mecca of golf and grass. But everything about it's so sick. Driving in, the Masters dinner, the Champions dinner that they have, the concession stands, the rules, no phones, just everything about it is unbelievable. And you know what? I'm just so fired up to have these LIV guys and PGA guys at the same tournament. And I just saw Brooksy doing Brooksy things. He had an interview and a reporter asked him, like, do you think it's possible for you to shoot 59 at this tournament? And Brooksy's response was, have you ever played this course? No, I haven't. Yeah, I could tell by that question. That's what he said.
Yeah, I could tell by that question. Brooksy is like, the best.
And you can't shoot a 59.
No, you can't dart 59 here, pal, but thanks for the question. Thank you for your time, and thank you for being a part of Masters Week. Speaking of LIV guys, Oaz, I'm just looking at the big board. I want to get into some of picks. Maybe you had a chance to look at some different guys. Obviously, we asked Nosti later in the show about his picks, the expert's opinion, but I'm looking at a couple different things right here, and I want to get your opinion on. I got John Rahm to win. That's plus 1,100. I really like him for a top 10 finish at plus 115. I think that's a good sprinkle there in terms of value. He's a guy that I think is going to be in the mix come Sunday, and at plus 115, not, you know, crazy odds, but definitely sprinkle some cash there with being on the plus side of things. Another guy, a sneaky one, I think is a decent pick, Ozzo, is Sam Burns. Sam Burns to finish top 20. Now that is plus 190. He has four top 10s in 2024. He's been playing really well this year. Obviously looking to stay on that heater. Yes, Augusta is a different animal, but if you're looking at a top 20 like finish at some pretty good odds, plus 190 is pretty good. Now, another one I wanted to ask you about is your boy and our boy, the hotel chain himself, Mr. Hotel Tonight, Wyndham Never Hung Clark. He's never played at the Masters. He has played Augusta four times, but not at the Masters. A top 10 finish for the hotel chain, Hotel Tonight, is plus 330. Do you like that, or can you not even sprinkle that just knowing his name? Yeah, plus 330 for a top 10.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. That's a good bet right there.
Are they just having to try to take the bait in because he's playing well?
They
he's
might had
a good,
be.
You know, stretch, and he's never played Augusta, though. This is a different animal. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd be scared. They might be baiting us there because I haven't heard Wyndham's name or, you know, Radisson's name too often recently. So I don't know. You know how I feel about Wyndham. Fucking.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, we can. The hotel, Mr. Hotel Tonight. That's one I'm iffy on. Again, just the odds stand out to me. Another
that's a good
guy,
bet, though.
I think so. There's another guy that stands out to me is a 20-year-old just turned pro. This is Nick Dunlop, top-ranked junior golfer in the class of 2022. And he's now the number one. He was the number one amateur. He won the Amex Championship back in January. He is the first amateur to win a PGA event in 33 years. The last guy to do it was Philly Ferda Mickelson. So Nick Dunlop obviously has never played this tournament, but a top 20 finish is plus 650. So if you're looking for like a long shot, a Cinderella story, something cool to bet on, I wouldn't necessarily throw the goddamn farm on that one, but maybe sprinkle it. I think that's a decent bet. But some of the ones I really like here, Ozzo, Tiger Woods to make the cut at plus 120. I think that, you know, Eldrick. I think if he's going to be in the mix, he's going to be in the mix. Top 30 finish for Eldrick is plus 170. Now, someone was tweeting out earlier in the week that he shot like 31 on the back on a Monday. It's like, okay, that's great, and that's unbelievable. But, boys, we talking about practice. I mean, it's the old Allen Iverson line. We talking about practice, not the game, not the game that I give it my all. We talking about practice, man. Like, come on, are we really throwing out Tiger fired a 31? I mean, he could do that in his sleep in any practice round. Think about how hard it is when you get inside the ropes. The pins are tucked. The people, the patrons are around. It's Jim Nance on the call. I mean, it's a whole different animal. I don't care if you're the greatest golfer of all time. It's still, the stakes are high and the chins are more tucked. So I don't know if Eldrick can put it together one final time. I'm hoping he can, but I'm going to take that bet. That's a Billy guarantee. Just being a Tiger guy, I got to go plus 120 on that. DJ top 20, Ozzo, is +140. Dustin Snow Johnson. I mean, you got to think a guy like that who's won there, a George, a Peach himself, could compete and at least be a top 20 like guy. No,
for sure. That's a good bet too. DJ's going to show up.
Yeah. So I got that DJ. And then, you know, Nosti, he had mentioned one of the guys is a sleeper, Xander Schauffele at +1600 to win. I like that one. I think, you know, just talking to him, it's only a matter of time before he breaks through. Colin Morikawa, top 10 finish, +375. I would sprinkle some action on that one. I think the California kid can get it done at least inside the top 10. One bet I think is hilarious that I hate rooting against guys, but it just it kind of just stuck out to me in terms of like, well, I might take this one. Jason, you had a bad day to miss the cut at +245.
Yeah, I like that one too. Jason,
I don't know. Missing, like, I feel like
he's missing the cut. Yeah, I might sprinkle. Like
there's one guy that can miss. I feel like there's like one like guy that's just kind of all over the place the last few years, like. You know, I think like I'm maybe looking at that. Did you have like anything you on your own?
Ozzie? Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you watched the Valero Open. I watched the finish. This Akshay Bhatia guy, he's a lefty. Yes. Lefties do well at Augusta. He was firing, man. He was firing. He won he won the playoff. I think he finished -21. I think third place was -11. So he absolutely crumbled the field pretty much, and he's playing well. He's a young kid. First, he had to win that tournament to get in the Masters. I like his odds at least making the top 20. I think he's going to play well. And then Jordo, another bet I always do at the Masters. It's a lock. I don't know what the odds are. Probably not great, but it's an absolute lock. Freddie Couples making the cut. The guy always does well the first 2 days. He fires on that course. He's got a green jacket. Freddie Couples make the cut.
Okay. I think Freddie's playing. He might have been hurt, but if he is in, I love that bet.
Is he hurt?
He withdrew from a Champions Tour event like 2 weeks ago, so I'm not sure if he's in the field. I'm hoping he's playing. I haven't got word on if he is. Honestly, I hope he is because you're so right. How smooth is that guy's swing, Freddie Furta?
So unbelievable. Butter.
You know, he's had like – he's almost been married. Like, I don't want to like start rumors about the guy, but it's kind of well known, especially in the golf circuit and just through the grapevine. I think he's been almost married two or three times. And I'm pretty well confirmed on this. If I don't want to break the news,
old shoot, right?
He packs up in the middle of the night and leaves. Like, even if he owns the house, like he packs up in the middle of the night and heads out and like sends him a note, like, yeah, I got cold feet, you know. Freddie has commitment issues. Who doesn't over here? Fuck. Yeah. Freddie, you're all right, buddy. Stay with it. So I think that's just a little funny bit on Freddie. I mean, he's the ultimate guy in and around the clubhouse, a guy that's always around Ryder Cups, the Tiger Woods, you know, connoisseur, just always around him. So hopefully Freddie's in. I haven't gotten word on that. Ozzo, going to be a great week. Again, we chatted with the man, the myth, the legend, Colton Nost over here. He's going to be on the course, boots on the ground at Augusta starting, I believe, today he flew in. So great chat with him. Ozzo, let's send it over to the Frozen Four special. We had Denver's coach. Man, we've been buzzing these interviews. We had DC on. That dropped on Monday. So, folks, if you haven't checked that out, please go over to our YouTube page. Watch that. We had Denver's head coach stop by. Talk everything Frozen Four, coaching the modern-day athlete, and just the state of college hockey and a few different things. Ozzo, I've known DC for a little bit. Not well in any terms, but he was a guy that was in the Green Bay system, and he had coached my brother a little bit, and obviously, you know, had played against him at Denver as a student coach and then the assistant. I was just very impressed with his level-headedness, his approach, and how he was just able to get across the message in very simple words, but so effective. Like I was very impressed.
I was too. Yeah, I knew I would be too, you know, going in. And you have known him a little bit. I've never really talked with him, but you can just tell just the way he carries himself. You don't even have to listen to him talk. The way he carries himself and walks around, that's kind of who he is. You can already tell just by looking at him. And yeah, he was just unbelievable. And I loved that. You know, we were able to ask him some of those questions. I thought it was cool. He's like, yeah, I mean, I cheer for the NCHC, you know, like, yeah, because you asked him that question. I mean, you got to be kind of pumped. He's like, yeah, there's a little bit of that, but you want the NCHC to win. And then just talking, you know, relating to younger players, he's like, I mean, it's pretty easy. It doesn't matter how old you are. If you're an older coach, a younger coach, you just got to talk to the guys. There's got to be a good stream of communication. And that's what it boils down to. You know, you gotta get to know the players, and then you just got to have an open line of communication where everyone's on the same page. And he made it sound pretty simple, man, but it is really simple. You know, when you say it out loud, it's just another thing to actually do it in real life. And he actually, you can tell he does it in real life.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, just rooting for the NCHC and talking about that, of how you're kind of a band of brothers. And I thought it was really cool that Jim Montgomery had kind of started that in the NCHC in terms mm-hmm. of, when you guys beat him out in Tampa Bay, he was the first guy to tweet out, hey, I hope North Dakota wins. I mean, that is a very classy fella, and that's no secret why he is where he is in Jimmy Furta Montgomery. And if you're learning from a guy like that and you're able to take in little things that you notice in terms of even going back to when they lost to UMass Slamhurst, Ozzo, the first mm-hmm. thing he did was share his notes with Duluth. I thought that was such a classy move, sick, too, in terms of, hey, here's our pre-scout. Yeah. Here's what they do. Here's their tendencies. I'm not sure if it's going to help you, but hopefully it does, and hopefully you're able to game plan a little bit off of what we had in terms of going into our pre-scout. So I just thought DC was such a mature guy. I mean, only 34 years old. He'd been coaching since he was 18. So thanks again for DC stopping on, and good luck to him. Ozzo, I'm cheering for those guys in the Frozen Four. I obviously had picked BC, but fuck those guys. I'm all in on DC, Johnny Chan style. Sure. But speaking of winning, Ozzo, we want to talk a little bit about the Hobie Baker. That'll be awarded on Friday, obviously a UND product, and Jackson Blake is up for it in the Hobie hat trick. Who do you see winning this? Obviously, there's always East Coast biased. There's obviously a little bit of that coming into play with two of the East Coast players, but they deserve it, rightfully so. Who do you have winning your Hobie, taking it home on Friday, if you were a betting man?
Yeah, I mean, I'll mention Blaker. I think he does deserve to be on this list, the top three. He had an incredible season, and he was one of the top three players in college hockey. Unfortunately, he's not going to win it. It comes down to Cutter Gauthier. He's got the most goals in the NCAA. So, and then you got this Macklin Celebrini, this kid who's going to get drafted first overall. Who do you pick? You know, you got Gauthier, who just backed out on Philly, gets traded to Anaheim, I believe. You know, he's got that going on. And then you got this Macklin Celebrini, who's going to go one overall. I feel like you got to give it to Macklin Celebrini. If you're college hockey, you need that number one overall pick to be the Hobie Baker winner. So I feel like he is going to win it.
Yeah, I think that's a safe call. I am going to go on the other side of Boston over to Chestnut Hill. I'm going to go Turd Cutter Gauthier. I think it plays into the theatrics of what he did this year in terms of saying, hey, fella, I ain't going to torts. I'm good. You know, you can trade me or I ain't going to sign. So I am going to go over to Cutter Gauthier. I think he's going to win it. Now, I do think that it's a tight race. And normally, Ozzo, it's, you know, you have an idea.
It's kind of clear cut. Yeah.
They award it. Right. Exactly. You have an idea. You think you're going to know who wins it. Now, the one year I just remember that I thought Matt Fratton was going to win it back in the day, and they gave it to Andy Mealy. Now, was it because Fratton threw a lawnmower in the middle of the street and had a couple, you know, citations? We'll leave it at that. I'm not sure. But this year, more than ever, it feels like it's a two-head race. Now, Blaker, I think he's right there, but I think it's 1A, 1B, and then there's two. So I just think the two Boston kids, it's a flip of the coin. Now, who's had the more impressive year? Obviously, the Gauthier with a lot more goals. Sure. I don't know how the point total is. It's crazy. A guy like Will Smith is left off the list and he leads the nation in points. I mean, it's just wild to think that.
Weird.
I don't know. We'll see who it is. I think you can't go wrong either way, but as you know, I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be interesting on Friday, and I'm going to have to try to maybe find a line on that. Maybe I have to text a bookie offshore and see if we can get that, because I can't find a line on that, but Ozzo, I know I picked BC, but I'm rooting for our boy DC with DU. Wanted to ask you, what are we thinking for this week in terms of Frozen Four? Thursday, Saturday, obviously, we've got two games going off the box in St. Paul on Thursday and then sliding over to Saturday. Like, are we going to get some decent crowds? I mean, we joke with DC, like, fella, the only people that travel from Denver is the goddamn band. I mean, Michigan, like, they don't historically yeah. travel all that well. I mean, I've been to Frozen Fours even back in the day when I think college hockey was a little bit more prevalent. And still, Michigan, okay crowds. I think it'll be decent because it's in Minnesota. But are teams like BC and BU really bringing a solid fan base to St. Paul? Like, is this going to be sold out, or are there going to be empty seats at the XL Energy Center? Because you hate to see the barn not full, fella.
No, the barn will for sure be full just from Frozen Four fans. I don't think any of these teams are bringing in a fan base that's going to like overtake the crowd. I think most of the fans in there, most of the people in the seats will just be hockey fans that just enjoy watching the game. And they'll probably pick a side to cheer for, but yeah, that's kind of unfortunate. There won't be like a real fan base there. I mean, I've seen, you know, I've been in Frozen Fours with BU and BC in them, and they don't bring a ton. And I've been in Frozen Fours with Denver. They don't bring a ton. I've never been in a Frozen Four with Michigan, but I remember we played in Cincinnati, I think, against them. And that was like not that far away from Ann Arbor. Not a ton of Michigan fans there. So I just don't see a lot of them bringing too many fans.
Yeah, it was funny. After we got off the call, remember I was tripping DC about their fan base not bringing a whole yeah. lot of action. And he's like, he was yeah. telling us, like, well, we sold out Coors Field and we had, you know, 30,000 other people, I forget, at the other stadium outdoor when they played CC. And he sent me a picture on his wall of those games sold out. And I said, fella, let's see this weekend, hey? You know, like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's yeah. like, hey, Swish, we get fans. So we'll see, DC. We'll see. But you got to wonder, Ozzo. I mean, you're speaking on just college hockey fans and, you know, the state of hockey does well. There's always people in and around watching mm-hmm. college hockey. There'll be a sold-out crowd there. You know that. But you got to wonder, there's got to be some trim walking over there across the bridge from the University of Minnesota into Dinkytown. Maybe looking to get a one-way deal from a guy like Celebrini or Hudson or maybe sure. even Gauthier. There's going to be some ladies and some honeys coming over from the Golden Gophers somehow finding their way in and around St. Paul because – you know, as you know, it's the state of hockey and the women there, you know, they, some of them or yeah. most of them, they appreciate a decent looking puck player.
You know how many girls are getting DMs right now? Hey, what are you doing Wednesday night? You know, like, what are you doing Wednesday? Yeah. You know, you want to check out the Wyndham? You want to check out the Radisson? Yeah.
Yeah. Staying at the Radisson Blue, do you have a car on campus or can I get you the Uber? You know, can I get 100%. You the Comfort? I'm not getting the Black.
Yeah. A lot of those guys that are coming here to play on all these teams, they come to Minnesota. Some of them to train, some of them to hang out with their buddies, go on Lake Minnetonka. They're here in the summer. They know some of these girls that are going to U of M. 100% they're getting DMs. Yeah, there's going to be a good flock of them in St. Paul this weekend, I think.
You got to love the beauties that used to post and still do it where – all you do is you get off the plane, you're right on the tarmac, or you maybe get to the rink or the hotel, and you just take a picture, like a random picture, a totally mm-hmm. just burger of a picture, and you just throw out the geotech. St. Paul, Minnesota.
just letting them know. Letting them know.
Oh, man. And all of a sudden, it's like a slot machine. It just starts filing in, you know. It's just like, oh, my God. Just letting the honeys know, boys. Hey, it's a tale as old as time. So that'll be funny to see the crowd there. We wish the boys the best of luck on and off the ice. But, hey, focus on the game, boys. As we know over here, you know, you only get one or two cracks at that, maybe one if you're lucky. So leave it all on the line out there on the sheet, and hey, whatever happens after that happens. But Ozzo, going over to my favorite part of the show, we got a couple one hitters with the captain. I got my first question is Augusta related. If you were a betting man, which you are you taking LIV or the PGA Field to come out as the winner of this year's 88th edition of the Masters? Oh.
I'm going LIV. I think they pull it off.
Love that.
I just like where LIV's at right now, and I think they got some steam, and this is just going to – it'll kind of break the golf world if a LIV guy wins because Rombo was a PGA guy last year, so.
He was a PGA guy until it financially didn't make sense to be a PGA guy. So you got to love yeah. that. You got to love that. I'm with you there. I hope Rombo – I'm honestly hoping a guy like DJ Snow can come out of the wickets mm-hmm. and just somehow win. I think that would piss a lot of people off. Or Brooks Koepka. So that would be nails if that was done. Number two, Ozzo, if Denver wins at all, then that's the Natty Chip. They secure their 10th championship in school history. Is a guy like David Carl in the National Hockey League next year?
100%. I forget who I was talking to about this. It might have been on Twitter, but I'm like, yeah, this guy is, he's gone next year or the year after. And I don't know. There's got to be teams calling after this year for sure, you'd think. I mean, we talked about it a little bit last episode.
Yeah, I'm fully with you. I'm very impressed by DC. And if he wants to do it, he's there. Number three, as a single guy, Azza, which you were, you know, 3-4 years ago, what's fucking worse, man? Laundry or dishes? I mean, I just had a 3-day bout with laundry. Like, I literally wore everything in my closet for probably a month. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was working out in Lululemon chino pants at one point because I just didn't want to do the laundry. Like, yeah. It was just absurd. Like, I'm pulling out shit that I would never wear. I'm wearing fucking chino Lululemon pants shorts as boxers. Yeah, yeah. Like, what am I doing? I'm wearing a turtleneck and I'm going out at 75 degrees. Oh, yeah, that looks pretty good. How about you just do your fucking laundry, you asshole?
Laundry. Laundry's way, I mean, laundry's terrible. It's just like Jordan, like I have too many clothes in my closet so I can go through them. I can go weeks without doing my laundry. And then once I'm out, I'm like, holy fuck, I got an absolute mountain of laundry to do. And I gotta switch it over to the dryer. And then as soon as it gets out of the dryer, I gotta fold it or hang it up so it doesn't get wrinkled. I mean, holy Christ. I've thought about, Jordan, this is a kind of a funny story, but we had a guy at Mini Movers on work comp, or he was just injured. So we had to have him doing some things. And I'm like, hey, buddy, I got a fuckload of laundry. You got to take this to the laundromat and do my laundry, you know? So I got a mountain of laundry done by one of my employees at Mini Movers because he was on the bench injured and we didn't have much for him to do. So I'm like, hey, this is a fucking great thing for you to do. Just sit at the laundromat and watch us go through the washer.
That's so huge. He's on the IR and you just put him to work. I love that. Also, I was telling my parents, my folks down here, when they were down here this past weekend, I was like, I would literally, if I'm single past, I don't know, a couple more years, like I think I would seriously consider having just like a live-in Russian chick or a nice Mexican for chick, sure. Some sort of cleaner just to follow me around.
Like a house manager?
Clean up after me. Yeah, be a house manager and I'll pay you. Yeah. We'll give you a decent salary. We'll put you on a meal plan. You can live in the spare bedroom. We don't have to sleep together. Mm-hmm. Just stay in the spare bedroom. We'll put you on salary. All you have to do is do my laundry, make my bed, do my sheets. Like, I am so bad at that shit, man. It's crazy how bad. It's actually embarrassing. Like, yesterday, I legitimately did laundry for 5 hours after I got – it was a shift from, like, 8 p.m. to 1 a.m. And I'm sitting there like, this fucking sucks. So – and then you get, you know – you're doing dishes, you cook a couple nights, and all of a sudden it's stacked up like Denny's at 3 a.m. after a Saturday prom. It's like, holy fuck. So that is, as a dude, single, I don't do well. So I'm with you there. I think laundry takes the cake. Azza, fourth question, last one. Man, I got a bone to pick with you. It's just hilarious. It's speaking of just, you know, being pathetic around the house. My Christmas tree is still up. So I've been letting this bad boy ride since December. It's been a Martin Luther Furta tree. It's been a Swish Tines, a Valentine's tree. It's been a St. Patty's Day tree, an Easter tree, Mother's Day tree. It's going to be a 4th of July tree. Who fucking knows? So why, what I wanted to ask you is, do I let this thing ride, baby, ride, or do I take this thing down? I mean, it's borderline embarrassing at this point, but you know what? We're almost at the halfway point. Like, this respectively could go back up in November. So really, I mean, we're almost halfway there. Do I just ride this thing out or do I take it down? I mean, I had my sister in town. I was like, Kylie, can you just take this thing down? I'm like, wait, actually, I don't know. I kind of like it. It's like, I don't know if I want it down.
Oh yeah.
It's fucking,
well, it's not the love. Yeah. No, it's, I think it, I mean, at this point it's hilarious. I think you ride it out. I mean, I've been in that spot too before. I've been like, holy fuck, this thing's still up, but it's kind of sick. You know, you turn the lights on. It's like, it's pretty good feel. Like, why would I take this thing down? I mean, who doesn't want a tree with lights in their fucking living room? I mean, it's great.
It feels like when you're in a college house, you know, when you have all the Christmas tree lighting, like up along the edges, like it literally feels like I'm in, it's kind of a nice little mood setter too. And I think just if you have a, you know, a overnight guest over or even a buddy come over, they're like, Jesus Christ, Swish. Like the tree is still up. I'm like, fella, put a fucking present under it because, you know, you're in a blink of an eye, and all of a sudden it's gonna be Christmas. I'm gonna be asking you for something, so just put it there right now while you can, because you know, pretty soon this thing's gonna be a bat of an eye. So yeah, it's pathetic and hilarious at the same time. But I don't know. I'm still on the fence with it. I just don't know if I want to take it down. But folks, that was One Hitters with the Captain. As always, we are moving over to Nail Gun of the Week. Azza, what did you have for that, my friend?
I had. I don't know if you saw this, Jordo, but John Rahm and Tyrell Hatton, their caddies. Did you see this?
I did not.
their caddies had to find replacement caddies for the last day of their last tournament. Because their caddies apparently in the interview got injured from falling over after dinner. Both of them.
No.
Couldn't caddy the next day. And they were both laughing when they're answering. So like clearly these caddies on Friday night or whatever, because Liv plays the final round on Saturday, I think, or maybe it's Sunday. Maybe it was Saturday night they were boozing. But yeah, they must have been so cut. They injured themselves and couldn't caddy the next day. And God damn it, that's nail gun, baby.
That's so sick. And we were talking to Nosty about last call Lance, the former caddy. Like, imagine getting so cockeyed, you just faint or you fall down and your chin hits the ground and you can't caddy for the only guy you have. To, like, it's your only job is to carry wrenches and you can't do it because you got so banged up. It's like, fella, come on. That is all time. I love that. My nail gun of the week, I had Gamecock Jesus, who we had mentioned previously, just an absolute gun. Mm-hmm. I mean, South Carolina getting it done for Gamecock Jesus. You have to give him a little face time, even 6 feet under. So, Gamecock fella, if you're listening from somewhere in a grave in South Carolina, just know the boys at Live in Five are giving you love and deserve everything because you are a legend. And I don't know how I'm just learning about you, but thank you for crossing over my chin and seeing that. Because what a legend. Gamecock Jesus, one time, baby. Ozzo, my celly of the week, I had Dave Portnoy with the UConn Future. He put $600K on the Huskies to win, I believe, in December. He cashed out at $2.6 million. That is $2.1 million right in the pocket. How are you? No spit, no lube. That is a nice overall tug with a little bit of lube on it, honestly. So Dave Portnoy is my celly of the week. He was watching the game literally stone's throw away from my place over at DraftKings in North Scottsdale. So good to see Prez is doing well, a degenerate gambler. And that is my celly of the week. Fella, what'd you have?
I was watching Ovi's goal today, his 30th, and I had to pick him just because one part I've loved about Ovi's his whole career as how fired up he gets when he scores a goal. He's got 852 goals now, and he gets just as fired up for his next one as he did his first one or, you know, whenever. And it was just a classic Ovi sell. He goes down to a knee, double fist pump, comes back up, another double fist pump, just screaming. So fired up to score his fucking 852nd goal in the National Hockey League. I mean, it's insane. This guy's almost – most guys don't even play that many games. He's got this many goals. It's just insane. And – I had to shout Ovi out for a celly. He still gets so fired up when he scores a goal. It's so sick.
Yeah, I mean, he's a kid in the candy store. That's why you love him. I mean, he's still excited. That tuck he had was so sick. I mean, we were doing the game here on Tuesday, Hockey Night in Scottsdale, and the way he just tucked that all the way down the felt, just a stick side, seeing eye shot, almost posting it on the short side, beat Alex Lyon, former Yale product, and Lake of the Woods, Minnesota. So love that, Ozzo. Ozzo, that was the pre-show tape to tape, as always, with you, my friend. Episode number 33. Again, we're going to send it over to Colton Nost right now, and we're going to get a Augusta breakdown. The Masters special over here at Live in Five. Cap, always good snapping a tape to tape with you. Have a good night, my friend. And folks, we hope you enjoyed this one. Fala.
Now introducing from the rodeo grounds of Pilot Point, Texas. This Lone Star State native graduated from Southern Money University in 2007, where he earned all conference and all regional honors. He then took his bag of wrenches along with a 12-pack of Bud Heavies to the PGA Tour, earning his card in 2009. Nosty is famously known to shape the ball both ways and can make a putt from the parking lot. Traded in his Texas wedge in 2020 for a mic and has been crushing it ever since. You can now catch him talking four iron stingers on his podcast, Subpar, as well as on the course commentator for CBS alongside the great Jim Nance. The official master whisperer of the Live in Five podcast and avid hockey fan, folks, without further ado, please welcome Colt Nost
to the Live and Five podcast. How we doing, brother? Thank you for taking the time to join the boys over here.
Thank you so much. That was definitely the most unique intro I've ever had. So well done on that. That was awesome.
Yeah, you know, Gnosi, I like to tell our guests that come on, they don't really know I do it. It's my radio voice. It's my alter ego. I call myself the fella over here at 93.1. So definitely hitting the airways. It's like a strip club DJ. You know what I mean? You got the announcer as Caramel or Mercedes is coming on stage. I like to think I could give that intro for her, you know, making her way to the pole. So, no, thanks again for coming on. And, you know, I ran into you last week over at DraftKings Sportsbook. We were over there for the IceCon Spittin' Chiclets kind of barstool shindig. And you were sitting there with, former UND Sioux grad, Mike Commodore, obviously. Gage and I, we played at North Dakota, and you're sitting there with Kami, but that table you were sitting there with, Nosti, I mean, you could talk all the shit you wanted sitting there. I mean, you had some big boys there. You had Kami, Jared Bull, Jody Shelley, so you could get away with goddamn murder sitting with those boys, but just talk about your kind of relationship with those guys, obviously being an avid hockey fan, and you like to tip it out down here at Whisper Rock with Mike Commodore as well.
Oh, yeah, so I've for some reason, I mean, it's not a shock, I guess. I've always hit it off with the hockey guys. They like to have some cocktails, play some golf, and talk some shit, which is pretty much all I do. So I get along with those guys very well. I met Mike Commodore. I remember before I actually lived out here in Scottsdale, myself and Graham DeLette went and played TPC Scottsdale one morning. He said, hey, my buddy, this ex-hockey player is going to join us. Do you care? And I was like, absolutely not. So Mike Commodore. And I had heard the name, didn't know much about him. Come out, he didn't talk for 18 holes. And I'm like, dude, this guy's kind of boring. Who the hell is this? Well, then you get to know Kami, and you realize he was just being a little shy that day because now he doesn't shut up. But he is one of my favorite humans. You know, you mentioned the podcast subpar. It's a golf podcast. And by far, the person we get asked to have back on more than anyone is Mike Commodore. Incredible storyteller. He's hilarious. And like you said, a rather big dude. So I feel comfortable when we're out in public with him if I happen to talk some shit to the wrong person.
Yeah, Kami was probably, you just caught him on a day, maybe he was at the Dirty Dog Saloon late night, and he was probably just, you know, a little hung or a little stung, because once those stories get rolling, he is all time. He's one of my favorite UND guys to hang out with. Like, when we were kind of coming up my freshman year, Kami was still playing, so you'd come into pro camp, or you'd even, you know, after the season would come up and kind of show the boys the ropes, so to say. I mean, I always tell the story on this podcast, but he was a guy that actually brought a sociology professor to a party my freshman year. His name was Frank White, aka Francis White, and the whole party was chanting Frank the Tank, like straight out of old school. So that was my introduction to Mike Commodore, just a full-on legend. But Nosti, while we have you here, obviously next week going into the holy grail of golf, we have the 88th edition of the Masters straight out of Augusta, Georgia. You're going to be working that with Jim Nantz, the legend. And obviously, you know, you're doing great things with CBS, and I love listening to you. But just touch on Augusta. I mean, how the Mecca, is it as good as it looks on TV? I mean, it just looks crispy, brother. It's just like not even a pine, you know, like a pine cone, or just it's not out of place. It's just crazy.
There's nothing out of place. You will find nothing out of place. It's the greatest golf course in the world. It is such a, you know, an honor to be there every year covering it. I believe my first year was 2021. So this will be my fourth Masters going there and covering it with CBS. But it is truly special. The first year I ever stepped foot on the grounds was in 2021, and it was limited patrons that year because of COVID and everything. So it was so great to go out there and be able to walk every single hole. Like, I went out there Monday by myself, walked all 18 holes, and just took it all in. But even then, like, when I wasn't working, I could go out there and watch buddies, and you didn't have to worry about missing shots or anything like that. It was a really cool first experience for me, but it's one, man, we get hyped up for every year. It's the first major. It's obviously been a while since we've had a major. And this year, I think it's going to be as exciting as anything. I think the buildup coming in with everything that's going on between PGA Tour and LIV, you know, how LIV, you know, they keep getting better players. They've got a lot of great players over there. And so, therefore, we don't get to see the best of the best play each other as often as we would like. So this is going to be the first time in 2024 for the most part. And I'm ready for it, man. It's going to be a hell of a Masters.
Yeah, it was unreal last year, I think it was, when that tree fell down, like, in the middle of the fairway or right around the tee box, and then, like, 4 hours later, whatever it was, it looked like nothing even happened. It's like, how does this grounds crew just get everything cleaned up? They make it look so crispy rice, as I like to call it. But if you're looking at the Masters, you're looking at the field, you'll see, like, who do you have for your favorite? Is it hard to go against a guy like the Scoot,
Scotty Scheffler, I mean, if he can putt and he can play the way he can, it's pretty hard to bet against him, no?
You know, I've been off the last 6 or 7 weeks, and it's getting closer to the Masters. And every time I'm out at a bar or whatever, hanging out, people always be like, who do you like? And I'm like, I mean, it's obvious, isn't it?
Yeah.
The guy is a massive favorite. He was a 2.5-to-1 favorite at Houston last week. Ended up missing that short putt to get into a playoff. And, you know, depending on where you look at it, he's 4, 4.5-to-1 to win the Masters, which is just insane. I mean, that's Tiger-like numbers.
Mm-hmm.
He's a huge favorite. And it's, and honestly, he deserves to be. I mean, that's how well he's been playing. And in these big events, you look back to the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill, where he cruised to victory. And then the Players, he shoots that insane 64 on Sunday to run those boys down and win another one. Like, I mean, he's the best player in the world, and it's really not close right now.
No, see, do you think those guys coming from LIV, they're used to playing 3 rounds instead of the full 4? Does that have any, like, does that set them back a little bit when they come into a major? Or is that just not as big of a deal?
You know, I think last year we kind of thought it might a little bit, but then you go out there and you see the way they played. I mean, Brooks was leading the entire week at the Masters last year before John Rahm took over. Phil Mickelson finished second. Brooks went on to win the PGA Championship. So, no, I'm not worried about those guys at all.
Yeah.
I mean, what Brooks Koepka does in majors is just phenomenal. His record is ridiculous. And for some reason, I mean, when that bell goes off in the big ones, Brooks brings his best to the table. And, I mean, he's got 5 of them already. And even though, like, most of us over here in America, like, we haven't seen these guys play much this year. But I can promise you, him, John Rahm, who I played with twice the week before last up at Whisper Rock, those boys, Dustin Johnson, Cam Smith, they're going to be ready to go. It wouldn't be surprise me one bit if one of those guys contended.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, Nosty, in terms of just if you were a betting man, are you taking a PGA guy or a LIV guy, or is it kind of just, you know, whoever's buzzing that week and really has it going? Are these LIV guys, they're up to the, you know, the challenge, and especially a major, especially going into Augusta, like they're all in on this, no?
Oh, of course they are. I mean, this is what they do for a living. You know, they've been criticized a lot for going to LIV, but it's generational money. It's hard to turn down, but they're still competitors. This is what they've trained their whole life to do, and if you can't get up for the Masters, I don't know what you're doing, because yeah. I mean, the second you step foot on the grounds, it's a special feeling. It just feels bigger. You're probably more nervous than you are at any other tournament. And you know that your name will be in forever associated with Augusta National Golf Club, the Masters. And that's incredible. I mean, that's for us as golfers. I mean, as a kid, you're on the putting green at 10 years old saying, you know, this putt's to win the Masters. It's just, every single person in the world can probably tell you what every hole at Augusta National is. If you've watched golf at all, like, it's the most, just because they go there every single year. So every time they go to some camera shot, you're like, oh, that's 6. Oh, that's 8. Like, everyone knows. And it's so special. And I can't wait for it to get started.
That's what I wanted to ask you. Do you have a favorite hole at Augusta if you're looking at just one, pinpointing it?
Yeah. So obviously there's so many just gorgeous holes, but I remember when I went out and I walked the first nine, I made my way to number 10 and walked down the hill, and it's just gorgeous looking at that green down the hill. But then you go to the tee box on 11, and it's kind of a little uphill. And then right before you get to the top of the hill, it peaks down to where you drive the golf ball, and you see 11 green and 12 green. It's like one of the most gorgeous things I've ever seen. And I got to the 12th tee box, the iconic par 3, and it was about as amazing. It was better than I could even imagine. I just sat there for like 10 minutes by myself and looked around. And I mean, it almost looks fake. It's that beautiful, and it's also a genius par 3. The way it is designed, the really small green, the way it angles with Rays Creek, it's by far my favorite hole. But there's a lot of them. I love 13, the par 5. I love 15, the par 5. But yeah, 12, just it's something special. I think it's just when I walked over that hill on 11, and you could look down at Amen Corner, it hit me, and I was like, man, this is really cool.
Yeah, that's cool. And I wanted to ask you, Nosty, you're walking there, you're walking the course, you're commentating, but do you have like a go-to snack at the Masters? Is it the pimento cheese? Like, what are you going with, you know, pre-game to get you dialed in before you step on the course to work that day, or maybe after, treat yourself with a, you know, a nice beer going down? What are you washing that down with?
So I actually do like pimento cheese, and this might rub some people the wrong way, but it just doesn't blow me away. Where I grew up in Dallas, this place called Royal Oaks Country Club, theirs was phenomenal. So at Augusta, actually, I think my favorite sandwich there is the egg salad, which I never thought I would like, but somebody told me to try it. and I love it. It is fantastic, but there's so many good ones. I mean, it's hard to go wrong with the fried chicken. You know, I need to watch what I eat a little bit, so I try not to eat too many of those.
Yeah.
But it's pretty cool. I mean, you go down there and you get a sandwich and a beer, and they tell you it's like $3. If you're like, this place is just the best.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And I wanted to ask you, like, when you're on the air and you're working with Jim Nantz and some of the hockey guys that the commentators, and especially a guy that I spent a little bit with time with in St. Louis, who was a good buddy of mine, now working with the Chicago Blackhawks, and Darren Pang, with, they would always have like a big board of like buzzwords to kind of work into a broadcast. Is that something you do in terms of like play games with your buddies, or like they'd have like one of their buddies call in and be like, you got to use this word. So like in hockey, you'd be like, you got to throw in the word squirts, like the puck squirts out to the slot. Or is it like, you know, the goalie's as sticky as they come or something like that. Like there's nothing better than coming from behind. Like, is there different words or phrases that you're kind of working into a broadcast, you know, in terms of, you know, trying to play with your buddies, or is that just natural, whatever comes out, comes out?
No, for the most part, obviously, we take it pretty serious, especially at the Masters. But there are, like, when I'm on the road, you know, we have this big group text with a bunch of buddies, and they'll text and be like, hey, get this word in or something like that.
Yeah.
If it's nothing crazy, I'll do it, and it's fun. And some of them bet me that I can't. So that's obviously a challenge, and obviously one I'm going to win because I can get it in there.
Right.
But yeah, that's a fun little game that can also get you in trouble if you're not careful.
Yeah, 100%. Well, sure. I just remember like Panger, like one of his calls, or maybe even been someone else that I know just in commentating, was like, that is a thick defenseman who is powerful from the waist down, you know, just like different things. And even like Al Michaels has worked in different things over the years where, like, you know, it's going to be a wet and likely wild day, you know, just in terms of like the field condition. So I was just like, that's like the game within the game. Like, I'm sure your buddies are always texting you different things to kind of get different terms in. But as hockey guys know, Steve, like, even golf, I feel like they go hand in hand in terms of just golf terminology and hockey. I mean, I don't really speak English myself, and especially in a locker room, you're always trying to use different words or different creative ways to explain or articulate a shot or just, you know, what's going on. So are there different words? I always hear you say like smashing seeds. What does that exactly mean? As a guy that pretty much knows every term in hockey, like, what do you mean by smashing seeds?
Well, smash is just obviously you absolutely murdered it. Seed is something that golfers have just always said. It's like, oh, that was a seed. And it's just this pure strike out there that doesn't really move. You know, I like to throw in melted a lot because Kami always says that when we play golf. He's like, oh, that was melted. So I'll throw that in on, I like in that on the one. Broadcast for him. But the hockey guys by far have the best terminology. I mean, every time we've had one on our pod, Sleaze is always just like dying laughing. He's like, this terminology is great. I remember the first time we had Biz on, he said something about one of the fights he got in. He's like, oh, I just got Bambied. And obviously, like, you just think of it, and you're like, oh, my God, that's just – it's so simple, yet it's genius. And you just picture this little baby deer wobbling, and you're like, oh, there's Biz. He just got his ass whipped, and he's over there Bambied. It's great. I love y'all's terminology.
100%. I mean, I was even texting you yesterday, like, I'm going to go tee it up, and then we can go on at 5:30. I'm like, low and slow, nosty, choke and poke, too, right? Choke down on that thing, you know? It's just like we're always –
all you hockey guys are the ones that call me Nosty. No one calls me by my last name.
Yeah. Guy. 100%. And I always like to say, maybe, hey, just a little Bob Seger. You got to hold that thing off against the wind, you know, just a little terminology, you know, low and slow. I like to call a ball a nugget, you know, hooded, stinger, trap draw, all of that, stock. You know, it's like all these terms that you can kind of just work in. But I think that's something you do really well, and you bring a lot of color to the game. But I wanted to ask you, Nosty, just in terms of, you know, you're really connected with the players. I think it's really cool how you have a relationship with a lot of guys on tour. I think in terms of just, you know, being that bridge between the older guys, the older generation, and then the players, you're kind of that mid, you know, that bridge in between. And there's some guys you probably have really good relationships on tour with. And I just wanted to ask you, like, if a guy misses a cut, say on a Friday, are they texting you? It's like, hey, you know, let's go to the local Chili's. Let's go have a couple beers. I got to wash this one away. Meet me here at 5:00. Or is that something, you know, just to blow off some steam? And even when you played missing a cut, is that something guys do just in terms of, you know, just kind of getting away from the game?
Oh, 100%. And yeah, it still happens. It happened when I played. I mean, I always laughed, you know, Friday afternoon. I feel like people were looking to see what I was shooting because I've always been a very social guy. I know a lot of people in every city we go to. I know all the good spots to go to. So Friday afternoon, if I wasn't playing well, my phone started going a little crazy. But even for me, when I knew, like, say I played Friday morning and I was going to have the weekend off, it was, let's start scrolling to the bottom, see who the boys are going to miss the cut, who's a good time to go out with.
Yeah.
So definitely, yeah, they still message me all the time when because I know I'm going to be down to have a good time most evenings. But yeah, there's so many great guys out there. And yeah, I have a great relationship with, my last tournament was just 4 years ago. So right. I still consider these guys really good friends of me. I mean, we still go to dinner and stuff when I'm on the road. A lot of the guys nowadays rent houses and have chefs because they're fancy and rich and they're nice enough to invite me over, which is great. And that's one of the things though, that's always the toughest for me about being on the broadcast and then being friends with these guys is, you know, they're going to tell me things that they probably don't want to go on the air. And I always am very careful to cross that line. Like, hey, if they say something I think is interesting that might be good for the broadcast, I'll always ask first because I never want to, you know, have a private conversation and say something the next day to be like, dude, what the hell? Like, that was not meant for public. And I'm like, I get it. And that's one of the biggest things that always I get a little nervous about.
Have players treated you differently since you started doing TV rather than when you were a player on the tour? Or is it kind of just the same relationship and you're just kind of one of the boys still?
For the most part, it's been 100% the same. Just still one of the boys. Like, they know I got their back. I'm never going to say anything unfair. Like, if you had a shitty shot, though, I'm going to give my honest opinion. And if I think you made the wrong decision, you know, that's what I get paid to do, is to give my opinion. For the most part, they've all been great and maybe even nicer now because they know I can bury them on air. So they need to kiss my ass a little bit. But yeah, there's been a few that have been a little different. I'm not going to use any names when it comes to that, which has been honestly probably really disappointing for me because like they were friends of mine. And not to say we're not friends, but it's definitely the relationship has changed, which I don't think it ever should because I know how to keep them separate.
Right.
Yeah.
Nosti, let's get into your career. You graduated from Southern Money in 2007. Holy trim there, mind you. I've spent a couple nights on that campus just in and around the Dallas area. But you had a great college career. You were all conference. And then you transitioned 2 wins on the nationwide tour. That was the Fort Smitty Classic and I believe the Price Cutter Championship. T3 at the Players 1 year, I believe, in 2016. So making that transition and getting into media, I guess, what was the transition like there? Was it just some injuries? Did you have just enough of the playing days? Were you kind of grinding up and down? Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so my career was kind of up and down to start. You know, I like you said, I won what is now the Korn Ferry Tour twice right out of college. Got my PGA Tour card, and it's probably the worst thing that could have happened because golf was just so easy for me for 2 years. I feel like I won. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did. I won a lot of tournaments. Played really well. And I thought I was just going to cruise into the PGA Tour and have this massive career. And I got slapped around a little bit. I didn't probably take it as serious as I needed to, but still had some very solid years. And I was just really starting to feel comfortable out there in 15, 16. And then I got a hand injury that actually first got diagnosed wrong. And I ended up having surgery on my wrist, which wasn't the problem. The pain was always in my thumb. So I had wrist surgery, was out 9 months, came back, hit a shot in Dallas, I think my second or third week back. Something felt wrong again in the thumb, had it looked at, and they're like, dude, your UCL and your thumb's like 95% torn. Like, you have to have this thing operated on immediately. So I was out another 9 months. The game had changed a lot. Obviously, being out that much is really hard. Being away from competition for that long is very difficult. And I never got my game back, to be fair. And I was offered a Sirius XM job kind of as I was still playing, doing a show with my man Drew Stoltz on their channel. And then the podcast came about. I'd done a few events for Golf Channel through CBS with the TV. And when I played my last event in 2020 at the Phoenix Open, I had a decision to make. Like, did I want to go back and chase it on the Korn Ferry Tour against all these young, hungry college kids that are very excited to be there and I wasn't going to be, or I could kind of gamble on myself a little bit and take this media route and see what happens. And honestly, it's probably the best thing I've ever done. It has changed my life. I've never been happier. I've never been less stressed. I'm just having so much fun being out there. And it's been a game changer for me. I never thought in my life I would be on the side carrying a microphone, following these guys around, but damn, I'm glad I'm doing it.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's kind of like where I was at in terms of just even my playing career, Nosti. And, you know, I played 8 years. I played 7 years over here and then a couple of years in Europe. And I was just like, you know, I'm 30 years old and do I really want to get into the grind of things, or I kind of want to just roll the dice and get to this media thing and kind of see where it goes. So it's really inspiring to hear, you know, you're doing well, you're loving what you do. And, you know, obviously you're in a great spot, but we got to touch on that last tournament in terms of that wasted management in 2020. You had Ray Whitney, AKA the Wizard, on the bag. And you got to tell the folks just that little story about 16 when the Wiz was just, you know, showboating a little bit.
Well, I have to take you back to Thursday where he was shitting his pants going into 16. I mean, this is Ray Whitney, right? 23 years in the NHL. He's won a Stanley Cup. He's been under the lights. No big deal. But we get out there, and I was like, you know what? This is going to be my last tournament unless I think I finish, like, top two. And I was like, I'm going to enjoy this. I want one of my best buddies on the bag. Ray lives right here in Scottsdale. I was like, would you want a caddy? And he caddied for Graham Bilette in the Olympics, actually, yep, over in Brazil. So I was like, would you want a caddy? He's like, absolutely. So we go out there, have a nice first round, shoot, like, one or two under par. But we got to 16 that first day, and it's packed house. Weather's beautiful. I mean, it's loud. I get in there, and I was like, you like 9-iron here? And he just looked at me and kind of shook his head and, like, didn't really talk. And I was like, you all right? He's like, I don't understand how you do this. He goes, I'm so damn nervous right now, and I don't even have to hit a shot. So he was so happy for 16 to get over Thursday. Then we go through there Friday, and once again, place is packed. And I hit ball on the green. I go mark my ball, and I look over to toss it to Ray to clean it. And I'm like, where the hell is he? I look over, and he's in front of the stands of the GA section over there where all the rowdy people are, flexing his calves and flirting with the crowd and everything. And I'm like, look at this asshole over here. I was like, hey, Ray, you mind cleaning this ball so we can, like, maybe try to make birdie on this hole? He's like, oh, my bad. He goes, I'm having a great time out here. I was like, yeah, I can tell, bud. Flexing your calves to the crowd.
That is all the best,
though, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had so much fun. He's great.
That is so good. Yeah, I've only met him a few times, but like you said, I mean, almost 1,300 games, if not 1,300 games, cup champ. And he's over there flexing, not the calves, baby. Those are cows, because those are pretty big. You know, he's a smaller fella, but yeah, he's definitely those calves. Those are National League calves, you know, Steve.
He is a smaller fella, but he is rather fit. He has kept it together, even retirement life. It's pretty impressive. But yeah, those calves are pretty damn big. They 100%. Give Phil a run for his money.
Yeah, 100%. What is one track maybe that people wouldn't know, obviously, other than Augusta, maybe it's overseas. Like, where's one spot where it's like your most favorite place you ever played other than Augusta, or, you know, one of those tracks that just, you know, you just can't wait to get back and play?
So I was in one because I played well there as far as, of course, on the PGA Tour, but Harbortown, where they play the RBC Heritage, which will be the week after the Masters.
Okay.
It's just such a unique golf course. They don't make them like that anymore. It's extremely narrow. It's crazy claustrophobic with those tall pines, and it's just, it's unlike anything else we play in professional golf. So I always just loved getting there. Like I said, I played well, but I think the golf course is absolutely incredible, and I wish they designed more like that. As far as overseas, we played the Walker Cup at a place called Royal County down in Northern Ireland, which has always been at the top of my list as far as favorites. I got a chance to go to Australia late last year to cover an event for Augusta National, and got to play a place called Kingston Heath, which is where the President's Cup will be in a couple years ago. And my God, this place is unbelievable. And I caught it on like a perfect weather day too, where it was like 65 and hardly any wind. It blew me away. I think the guys, when the President's Cup gets there and people see it on TV, that's going to be one when you go to Melbourne, Australia, you're like, I have to play that place. It was incredible.
Yeah, that would be awesome to play golf in Australia.
I've been very lucky. This game has took me some rather nice places.
No, yeah. Steve, when you're playing golf now, like, is it the same for a hockey player? Like, you retire from hockey and then you go play beer league, and it's just not the same. You know, it's not fun anymore. It's just like, is this not the same? Like, do you miss competition, or is golf? Are you still able to keep it competitive out there?
Yeah, so I think you always will miss the competition. That's just what you train for your whole life, and being in the mix is, there's nothing like it. I mean, that feeling of thinking you might puke over every single shot you hit coming down the stretch on a Sunday with a chance to win, it's hard to replicate that. It sucks at the time, but at the end you're like, damn, that was so much fun. So I think you'll always miss that. But I don't know. My life now is just, there's so much less stress, not having to worry about going out there and grinding. Like, I was one of those guys. I was one of the shorter guys on the PGA Tour. I didn't hit it very far. And with the way the game's changed where everybody bombs it, it's just hard for guys like me to compete out there. I mean, obviously you can still do it, but like I said, my life, I'm not worried about making cuts. I'm just worried about trying to be entertaining, not say something stupid and get canceled. But other than that, man, life's so much fun. And I still love to play. Like, I play 3 or 4 days a week when I'm home. I keep a handicap now, because when I play these PGA Tour guys or other professional golfers, like, I got to get some strokes from them, because my game is definitely not as sharp as it used to be, because I never practice, but I still have so much fun playing. Right now, it's like, I don't care if I shoot 67 or 77. It's, did I win money at the end of the day?
For sure.
Really all that matters. But yeah, man, it's fun. I rarely get mad anymore when I play bad. But like, early on, it was tough, because you still expect to hit those certain shots that you always knew you could. And now it's like little straightforward chips that I just never practice. Like, I suck at them and it drives me nuts. But then I just laugh it off and say, you know what? I should never get mad. I don't practice. And we still have a blast. And the guys are nice and they give me, you know, anywhere from one aside to two aside, depending on how good they are. And we go out there and we battle.
I like it.
Still pretty good.
Nosti, I wanted to ask you, like, what is one of the sneakier tournaments, maybe off the beaten path cities? You know, is it the John Deere Classic? Is it one of these smaller tournaments where you got a bar lined up? Like, I always remember just like going into Buffalo. Buffalo is a spot that just had, it was a sneaky city. Bar time was 4 a.m. You kind of have a good time at a dive bar. It was low key, good people. Like, is there any of these tournaments that you're going into that are kind of just, you know, not circled or household name tournaments, but you're like, wow, I got my spot picked out in this city. I got my bar stool dialed in. You know, it's a good spot to be.
Yeah, there's a few, but you mentioned John Deere Classic, and I think that's one that would surprise you. It's one that I have so much fun at every single year. We stay at this awesome hotel, and right across the street's a restaurant called Duck City. Phenomenal food, and Chef Jeremy there is a big golf fan, and he does it right. And I have the same table, 7 p.m., every single night, and the people that work there are so much fun. The waiters and waitresses are fantastic. And then upstairs, they have like a cigar bar. So after dinner, you go up there and they'll let me DJ, whatever. Yep. The cocktails get flowing. And it is seriously a little hidden gem on the PGA Tour. But yeah, that's one. If you ever need me, John Deere Week, I'm pretty easy to find. The other one, I mean, I know y'all spent some time in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
Memorial Tournament. That, I mean, it's a big time tournament, but that is a hell of a week. The crowds are incredible. There's a place called the Bogey Inn right down the street that everybody goes after golf. It's a really fun one that you can definitely get in some trouble at.
Where is the John Deere? Is that Quad City, Iowa?
Quad Cities, yeah.
Oh my God, that is unbelievable. I mean, there's a couple of Midwest self-proclaimed beauties over here, North Dakota and Wisconsin. I mean, that's right up my alley, Davenport. Brother. You're Duck City, you're on the DJ, you're playing the tunes, you're drinking tequila. Like, that's as good as it gets as far as I'm concerned. Drinks are like $4 probably, you know. That's right up my alley, man.
Davenport, Iowa. Yeah, I always joke. I was like, I just, after my bill at Duck City for the week, I just hope I break even with CBS.
Yeah, 100%. Mostly, I wanted to ask you, like, what are some of the better nicknames on tour? I mean, as hockey guys, big nickname guys over here, you know, my nickname is Swish. We got Ozzo. Like, Tommy Fleetwood's one name it kind of pops in my head. I call him Tommy Fleet Butter, but I think his nickname on tour is Fairway Jesus, because that guy, he don't miss a fairway. Is there any other, like, just low-key names or nicknames that the folks wouldn't really know about, or is it kind of just pretty stock?
I would say most of the best nicknames are with caddies. The caddies have great nicknames. You know, rest in peace. There was this guy, caddy out there forever, actually played and won on the PGA Tour, but his name was Last Call Lance, because obviously you can figure it out. I mean, he got last call every single time. He was a legend, though. His name's Lance Timbrook. I actually was paired with his boss, Jesper Parnevik, and very early on in my career and got to know him. But Last Call Lance was always one of my favorite. We actually have a new one now that we're trying to get going. And I actually, Aaron Rodgers played with him at the AT&T Pebble Beach this year. And I told Aaron to start calling him this, and that kind of gained some traction. But Bo Hostler and Austin Ekro. Okay. Mm-hmm. They're both members up here at Whisperrock. Austin won on tour earlier this year, but they're both sponsored by Michael Coors. So obviously it says Coors on their shirt. Well, Austin's the little skinny guy. Bo's a little bigger guy. So we got Austin, we call Coors Light, and we call Bo Banquet.
Banquet Bo.
Yes. Banquet. Yes. So
we're working on Banquet.
That's good.
A little bit. And Bo actually likes it. And he's like, dude, you told Aaron Rodgers to call me Banquet. He did it all week. It was amazing. I'm like, well, damn it. I was really hoping you wouldn't like it. But he did it. But yeah, Banquet's a good one we're trying to get to stick right now.
I like that. I think Bo Hostler might even actually live in the same building as me. But yeah, Banquet Bo, that's a nice name. But
the greatest out on the PGA Tour, and it's not even close, but he embraces it now. And I have made this, I did not come up with it. I will not take credit for that, but I did take it to the golf world and to television.
Yep.
But it's Charlie Hoffman, and we call him the Seagull because he just flies around and shits on everyone. Because it is. And now everyone in the gallery yells it every time I see him, like sitting down the fairways. I do the bird, wings.
Yeah.
He just had his foundation event a couple months ago, and they had these socks with seagulls all over it. So now he loves the nickname, which sucks. Yeah. I was hoping he wouldn't like it, but it's one of my favorites.
That's awesome. And speaking of loopers, Nostia, we were talking a little bit pre-show, and I was telling you how I caddy for my brother. I was on the bag for Nick Schmaltz this year at the Madison City Open, just one of the first tournaments you've ever played. You play with him. He's a pretty good stick. The 4 days, he was under par. But, Nostia, I got to tell you, man, I had everything dialed in the caddy bib. I mean, I had cigarettes, right, just in case you need a rally dart. I had the Red Man chew. Well, fellas, sometimes you got to chew on one. Condoms. Sometimes you got to play it safe. I had the groove cleaner, three sets of tees. So what I'm saying is, how do we get Nick Schmaltz over to the tournament in Tahoe? And I give the people what they really need is the caddy over here over in Swish, because I'm dialed in, man. I got everything. How does Nicky get a chance at that? Does he got to get on a different team than the Desert Dogs? Does he got to go win a cup? Like, how do we get him in that tournament? Because I think he can play.
That's a great question. I have no idea. Last year was actually my first year ever to that tournament, because normally my schedule doesn't work out. And damn, that is, you got to go. It is so much fun. Yeah. I actually ended up caddying for a hockey player. We were there to do this MC deal for Corbell with our podcast. And I met Alex Killorn several years ago, became friends with him. And he was there and he's like, I got a couple buddies coming out to help me caddy. They don't really know what they're doing. Would you want to do it? And I'm like, sure. I mean, it's July. I have no interest in going back to Scottsdale. It's 110 degrees. I'll stay up here in Tahoe and have some fun. And man, we had the best time. I made sure the bag was loaded, little Tito's Gatorade, keep you hydrated,
and a little
relaxed. And then the little airplane fireball bottles in case it's a little panic situation and we need to really relax. But he went out there, played great the first day, playing alongside TJ Oshie. Went out there. He was in third place after the first day. He's in the final group on Saturday with Steph Curry and Pavs Pavelski.
Yep.
And Killer had never played a golf tournament before. And there's 10,000 people down the first hole. Like, it's lined 5-6 deep.
Oh, yeah.
And my man, I didn't know if he was going to be able to talk that day. it was a great learning experience. And Steph ended up making a hole in one on 8, which was unbelievable. But one of the most fun weeks I've ever had. And I hope Killer gets back in again, because we said we're going to run it back. But you've got to go if you ever get a chance.
100%. It looks like just an absolute party. Like you said, that par three is unbelievable. You get the basketball shot, but
yeah,
it would be like, for people that have never played in an environment like that, like Killer going into that, even TJ Oshie, he's done a few tournaments now. I've even talked to him about it, just like how nervous he was the first time. Like, you don't want to hosel one and just kill somebody. Like, that's got to be such a different animal playing inside the ropes like that.
Yeah. The first day, like, there's a few people following, but it was nothing like when we got to that first tee, last group, first hole, and it's just lined, and you have to hit like a 3 or 4 iron off this first hole. So it's not like you're sending driver down there, but these people, I don't know if they just think they're like as good as professional golfers or what, but they stand in the dumbest places. I'm like, one of y'all is just going to take one to the dome. This is just, I don't understand why you were standing there. Like, this is not what these guys do for a living. And yeah, there's definitely a lot of nerves going on. It's cool to talk to the guys and just get their like thoughts on it, because they're not used to it. I remember Jason Kidd here.
Yeah.
I mean, shot free throws, made shots in front of from the whole world, won an NBA championship. And the first time he stepped foot on 16 here at Phoenix, he's like, dude, I can't do this. I have no idea how. I'm like, you've shot in a free throw in front of this many people. He's like, man, it's not even close to the same.
It really isn't, because it's just something about that little sweet spot on a wrench that you have to hit. Even like it doesn't even compare to hockey, because at least hockey, you got your boys out there with you. You know, you got the boys on the bench. You got the guys, you know, 5 or 6 on the ice. It's just nothing compares to it. But one spot, we do a golf trip every year, Nosty, and we change up the cities. We've done Nashville. We've done Vegas. Some years we don't even bring our golf sticks. We're just going on a bender. It's all of our North Dakota buddies. There's probably like 8 or 9 guys still playing in the NHL, probably 1 or 2 playing overseas, and then a few in the minors, and then guys that are done playing like me and Gage. But if you're sending the boys one spot, and probably partying might still be the number one objective, but if we want to get in some good golf, we did Charleston, South Carolina last year. It was pretty decent. Where's like one spot or one place that you would send the fellas? Is it Bandon Dunes? Is it, you know, Pine Valley or Pain Valley? Like, where are you sending the fellas?
So this is the easiest question you've asked me, and I give this answer to everyone. I have one day left to play golf in my life, I'm going here. Because now, Bandon Dunes, all those places, they're great. I have no interest in playing 36 holes. Like, I want to go have a great time at night, you know, dinner, out, have a few, not get up crazy early, play 18 holes, have a few, and do it all back. It's Shatter Creek in Las Vegas. I mean, it's just, it's heaven for me. I was just out there just spent 3 days there playing golf, and I was exhausted come the end because there wasn't much sleep involved. But for me, I got to have something to do after golf, and definitely, like I've said it, if I have one round of golf left to play in my life, I'm going to Shadow Creek. Between the golf course is great, the staff is even better, and just the experience, it's you cannot have more fun.
So yeah, we're headed back to Vegas.
Looks like we're going back to Nevada, folks. Pack your shit.
Twist my arm.
Yeah. Looks like we're heading back to Nevada, fellas. No, Steve, before we let you go, and we got to tee it up here soon, but you probably were giving me about one shot a hole in terms of, because I carry two big sticks in my bag. I call it the double dog system. Yes, I can make a putt from Tucson, but I just can't hit a drive, brother. I got good hands. I just, off the box, it's just not perfect. But before we get to the Dirty Dog Saloon, I wanted to ask you, one sleeper pick going to the Masters. We talked about Scottie Scheffler. We talked about some of the live guys. But what's like one guy that you would put some, maybe a little bit of action on and sprinkle in as a guy who would have pretty good odds, but, you know, maybe is a little bit of a sleeper going into this week at Augusta?
I don't think he's a sleeper, but I do like the odds. I mean, depending on obviously where you look, 25 to 30-ish to one range. He's probably like the sixth or seventh betting favorite, which is definitely not a sleeper. We can go a little more down the list if you want for that. But I have just thought for 5 years he is going to win around Augusta National at some point. His golf course is tailor-made for it. I think he continues to get better, even though he hasn't won as much lately as we all think he should. But Xander Schauffele, man, he is just a badass. He's hitting it so far right now. I'm doing some work with this guy named Chris Como. I get to walk with him a lot out there. His game just blows me away every time. He's a great putter. He's got a really good record for not winning at Augusta National. I just think Xander Schauffele is going to get it done at some point.
Does that do anything to his mentality coming into these tournaments, just not closing at the Players this year? Like, is that like a – or does he just move past that? I mean, I suppose it just depends on the player.
You know, I know it eats at him because he wants to close, obviously more than the media wants him to or anything like that, so then he can stop answering those questions. There's a lot of people that say, you know, he can't get it done in those big events. He was right there at TPC Sawgrass, the Players. I mean, Scottie shot 64. He probably let that one get away a little bit, but man, he's a big time player. He's 30 years old. I think once he gets one big one, I expect it to turn into, you know, multiple. I'm not saying he's going to win 10 majors or anything like that, but there's something about Augusta National and the way he plays golf that I just think really sets up well. And I would be shocked if before his career is over, he doesn't put on the green jacket.
My last question for you, Nosti, is you got any just good Tiger stories, whether it was coming up on the tour, maybe even just working now with CBS, you know, getting to maybe know him a little bit better. Like, what's one good Eldrick story you have for the people?
Yeah, obviously I've gotten to know him a lot more over the last few years. I actually got to walk with him for the first time at LA the year before last, and three of the 4 days, and he was great. Actually chatted some going down the fairways, and then I got to catch up with him during the pro-am. But my first year as a pro was at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, and I got a spot as being the reigning U.S. amateur champion. I was in the group behind him with Dustin Johnson and Jason Day on Thursday, and he lived down at Isleworth at the time. He would warm up at his house on the range there and then drive 10 minutes over to Bay Hill, basically walk onto the putting green, hit some putts, and then go to the tee. So we were like a group or two behind him, so I was going to see him. But I walk out of the locker room at Bay Hill, turn right to go to the putting green. It's kind of like a 20, 30-yard like kind of hallway that's covered, and all the media people were kind of lined up against the wall there. And I come out of the door, and you hear these metal spikes on the concrete just click, 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 and I turn around, and it's Tiger. And I jumped up against the wall with the media people and let him walk by because I was just absolutely fucking terrified. I was like, holy shit, there he is. I mean, I just let him go by. And it was so cool, man. He's just so different. When he's at a tournament, there's just a different feel. And it makes it so much better. I remember the one year he played Tampa, which he hadn't played in forever. He finished second at it. But they like had to add three extra entrances for all the people that were coming. And I tell the story all the time. Rory McIlroy was the number one player in the world at the time. He was on the range. And Tiger was on the range first. The place was packed. There was thousands of people. And this range is small. And they were just packed deep as all could be, just trying to see Tiger hit some range balls. He leaves. here comes the world number one, Rory McIlroy, and there might have been 10 people on the range watching him hit balls. And I was like, that just shows you how different this guy is.
Yeah. That's all. It's not even close to the same.
No, it's so cool, man. I hope somehow, some way, we can see him play, you know, 5-6 tournaments, at least all the majors this year, mm-hmm. and just somehow get in the mix. I mean, if he's going to get in the mix, it's probably going to be at Augusta just because of the knowledge he has of that place. But, man, when he's there, it just feels so much bigger, and I love it, man.
He's the best, man. I mean, he's the GOAT. He's obviously like this, even your age, no, Steed, even just the younger generation. I mean, that's who we grew up watching, and that's who we just grew up idolizing. I mean, whether he was, you know, wheeling a chick at Perkins or he's winning majors, like, this is my guy. You know, this is the guy that I love. He's the GOAT. It's Eldrick Woods, baby, every time.
Yeah, he is special. I remember this year at Riviera, I was out walking the Pro-Am just to because they didn't allow the gallery out there on Wednesday, and I just wanted to see how his game looked. And we get to the fourth hole, this par three, and I was kind of just like looking in his bag, and we were just chatting back and forth, and he's like, yeah, I had to go to this like kind of cheater three iron. I just can't hit it as high as I used to. I don't have the speed I used to. And I'm like, okay, whatever. We pulls out four iron, just normal blade one, and hits this thing to the moon, and it comes down just so beautifully. It goes to like 4 feet. I was like, oh, really? Just can't quite hoist it like you used to, huh? I mean, it's just – It's so different, man. He's awesome. He's
like jacked said, now too. He's huge. Dude,
his upper body is just massive. So it's cool, man. I'm excited. I hope he can just at least, you know, I think he'll make the cut at Augusta just because of, like I said, how well he knows the place. I don't know if he can get in contention. Just tournament golf is so much different than being at home with your boys playing and getting ready. But if he could somehow just get in that mix, the buzz that would be around that place, man, it'd be magical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be unbelievable, and we'll obviously be listening to you on the call, Nosti, and you know, it's you're one of the best in the game. I love listening to you, just the insight you have on the game, the way you articulate things, and we just want to thank you for coming on and stopping by Live in 5, the Masters edition with you, and look forward to watching that in Augusta and seeing you out there, baby. So thanks again for stopping by. We appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Awesome. Thanks again. He just takes the tractor another round.